Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, it is steady on my end. How about you?
Let me just test. It seems that way. Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, let's get rolling in 3, 2, 1. Welcome, everyone, to episode 353 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we've got some draft lottery reaction, and we're also going to talk about the top takeaways from game 2 of each team's first round series. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a guy for whom congratulations are in order again. Morten Jensen, the Bulls.
So, I deserve the congrats?
I mean, you might actually enjoy basketball soon, again.
Oh, I always enjoy basketball. In fact, I've enjoyed basketball far more after dropping the Chicago Bulls.
That's fair. Well, you might be able to pick them up back again, I should say.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. I'll always have an affinity for them in some level. I mean, 22 years of fanhood, but nah. I'm just glad to see, you know, the Charlotte Hornets, honestly, that they got up there. Like, was it five picks that they actually
moved up?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was five spots. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm excited about. They finally have a chance now to get someone. Like, they've always had these like mid-tier picks, and they haven't really done a whole lot with them. Finally, they have someone. I mean, you like at the worst, you get like a James Wiseman, well, or one of LaMelo or Anthony Davis or Wiseman or whatever.
I just think it's funny that in the one draft where there's no clear consensus, really top, not even top number one overall pick, but like top whatever, there's no clear tiers. Of course, this is the draft that the Hornets are going to move up.
Yeah, that's right. I actually had a conversation about this with someone I know who's a Knicks fan, and like he was really bummed, and I was like, dude, in this draft, it's fine. Like,
yeah,
it's okay. But Knicks fans were going crazy. Like, they were just, they had a meltdown over this for some reason. I don't know what they thought the 2020 draft would be.
I don't either. I mean, it seems almost better to slip down a few spots, but let's just start right from the top and like get into what the top few teams should do with their picks, because of course Minnesota won the number one overall pick, which sets up a pretty interesting choice for them. Of course, at the trade deadline, they acquired D'Angelo Russell to pair with Karl Anthony Towns and just give up on playing defense entirely. So, Mort, if you are Gerson Rosas in the Minnesota Timberwolves, what do you do at number one? Take LaMelo Ball, take Anthony Edwards, try to trade the pick? I think really the only sure thing is that they're not going to go for a center like James Wiseman.
Right. Trading the pick is something I would look into very, very aggressively. But I wouldn't take any deal, of course. It's still the number one pick, and you're getting a guy who will be on a rookie contract for 4 years, which could add some value. And like Carl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell aren't really that old. You can still draft a guy and like join up with those guys and have a core that's fluid. Like, there isn't going to be that one huge drop-off in age. So, like, you can go that route, but you can also go the other route and find a veteran who's in, like, his mid-20s, like, 25, 26. And that, too, would work wonders with, you know, Cat and D'Lo. So you can't really go wrong either way. It's just a matter of where do you get the most value. Do you go with the unknown or do you go with the known? And if you do go with what you know, who's out there? And what should a framework of a deal be? How do you match up salaries? Because you also have some contracts you might need to move to make the numbers work. So there's a lot there to plan ahead. But I think they need to look at trading the pick first and foremost. And if they don't find anything that's worth their time, that's when you go back and see, okay, we have these guys on our big board. What can we do with those guys?
Yeah, I think the problem from the Timberwolves' perspective, if they are trying to trade the pick, is that at number two, Golden State is also very clearly shopping their pick. So that's going to cut out some of the value. Like, you know, depending on who Minnesota would take at number one if it stays put, if a team knows it can get number two from Golden State, it might just want that instead because it wouldn't have to give up as much in theory. Now, the issue with Golden State is that they're going to be trying to trade that number two pick for an established player. So if you're a team that's like, you know, let's say the Knicks are trying to move up, I don't know that the Knicks necessarily have anyone that's going to interest the Warriors, maybe Mitchell Robinson, but like, they're not trading, you know, eight and RJ Barrett for number two. I don't think the Warriors would have any interest in a guy like RJ Barrett. So, you know, that might open some doors for Minnesota. Like if Atlanta wanted to move up, or if Cleveland wanted to move up, or even Chicago, you know, they have some of the younger prospects plus a pick to move up. But let's say Minnesota can't find a taker for number one. Who would you take, Edwards, Ball, or someone else?
That's the biggest question for me as well, because here's the thing. You know what you're going to get in LaMelo Ball in terms of the playmaking. Like he's just one of those guys with the court vision that is just outstanding. He's got great size as a point guard. But then the problem becomes, what do you do with D'Lo? Like, you can say that D'Lo just slides to the two, but he's a guy who loves to have the ball in his hands. He's also got a pretty good court vision. So I wonder if those two can fully coexist, because the ball also has to go through Carl Anthony Towns a lot. Like, he developed into like a secondary playmaker last season or this season. So it's just a matter of, can those three coexist given their multiple responsibilities? Like, it's one thing if you have several players who can do the same things, but if you have three players who are asked to do two things, both score and facilitate, that's a lot of possessions that's going to be eaten up immediately. Whereas if you go in the Anthony Edwards route, you're just going to get a guy who can score and who can play a little bit off the ball, but you're not asking him to facilitate, and you're absolutely asking him also to just devote a hell of a lot of time on defense, because this guy is built like an NFL linebacker, and he moves like a ballerina. That's a very, very rare combination. I think Edwards is the guy who has the most potential overall to become a superstar of anyone in this draft. But he's also one of those guys where you just have to question a little bit, does he have the IQ, like the basketball IQ? Does he have the understanding of what a good shot is? Does he have like that hunger to get better all the time? And if the answer is yes, like, you got to go Edwards and figure everything else out afterwards.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I've seen a lot of Wiggins comps with Edwards. Do you think that's a fair comparison in terms of not necessarily skill set, but some of the concerns associated with these guys coming into the league?
Yeah. No, I get that 100%, because there were times this year when they were playing against teams, you know, Georgia, and he could easily have established himself far more just off of his physicality and the advantage that he has athletically. And instead, he would just settle for, like, pull-up jump shots, pull-up threes, pull-up long twos. Like, it almost, like, I don't want to say, like, because this is going to sound like he's planning ahead, and I don't want to put that on him because I don't think that's fair, but he played at times as if he was just getting ready for the NBA, if you catch my drift. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, throw myself into situations where I might get injured. Like, screw driving into the paint. I'm just going to take this pull-up too. Play it safe. You're in the NBA next year. Which, on some level, even if true, I get, because why would you want to waste your or risk your health just for impressing NCAA competition? So I get that. But if this is his game, yeah, then there's a lot to work on.
Yeah, that I just think it'd be really funny if Minnesota traded Andrew Wiggins and then got the second coming of Andrew Wiggins 8 months later.
Yeah, drafted number one even. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's also why I wanted them to trade it primarily, because I just think they need something known. But who that is, I've seen the Minnesota fan base throw out Bradley Beal's name a lot, and sure, I guess, but like, what's the end goal? Just be like a 130-point team and hope you outscore everyone?
Also, why do the Wizards do that deal?
Yeah, right?
If anything, I mean, if you're going to trade number one or number two, it seems like Ball and Edwards, I don't want to say are like the consensus top two, because I think, I mean, if we've heard anything, it's that there is no consensus. But those guys seem to be at least like in that top tier of, you know, probably going to go somewhere in the top five. So if a team's trading for that pick, it's probably going to want a guard, whether it's one of those two. And like, if you're Washington, what does pairing LaMelo Ball with John Wall accomplish for you?
Yeah, I think the logic is that you would then try to trade Wall and just start over. But even then,
good luck.
Right, exactly. This draft is just weird. And it's going to be one of those where we look back at it in a couple of years and we're going to be saying, you know, there's good talent to be found in this draft. Mm-hmm. But circumstances and situations probably affected a lot of these players' careers, because everything is so mucked up. So many players barely played. I mean, LaMelo Ball has a sample size of 12 games. Denny Abdia played a lot better after the corona shutdown, but that's a small sample size as well. So you have to wonder, you know, is this who he is moving forward, or was he this very inconsistent shooter before the corona shutdown? Cole Anthony of North Carolina played 22 games, and you know, he shot horrifically, but a large part of that was that UNC couldn't hit a three. He had no one next to him who could hit the threes. There was no spacing. He had to do everything by himself. So that also has to be taken into consideration. There are so many subplots and question marks and small sample sizes all across like the first round of this draft, and it's muddying up the waters big time. I don't remember who said this on Twitter, but there was someone who basically said every team is scared S-less to win number one. Nobody wants to be in that situation right now. Nobody wants the number one. Everyone wants to be like in the 2-3 range, because then there's one team that's like takes all the pressure away from you, and then you can go from there. I think that is very, very accurate.
Yeah, I mean, just scouting in the age of coronavirus, there's going to be, it sounds like they're talking about having like virtual combines or like regional combines, but there's not going to be the traditional everyone comes to Chicago in one place, your doctors can evaluate these players, you can interview these players face to face. There's no, I know it, like, teams often overrate the NCAA tournament, and it should just be a larger sample size, take the whole season into account, but there was no NCAA tournament this year, so you know, there's no late riser like a Kemba Walker from, you know, 2011 or whatever it was. So yeah, I mean, it's if you're Minnesota, it's a tough spot, since, you know, really both of the guys you would realistically consider at number one have major question marks with the core that you have in place. You know, if you go Edwards, you do have to worry about him being Wiggins 2.0. If you go Ball, you have to worry about his fit with D'Lo. And also, I mean, he's not a great defender by any means, right? So they, you know, if we're talking about like trading for Beal would be you just have to score 130 or 140 to win. I'm thinking, you know, LaMelo, Cat, and D'Lo, it's probably the same thing.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I think that's very accurate. And I think one thing that we haven't talked about, which I think could be in place, as well. Is Minnesota looking to trade down, right? I mean, that has to be on the table as well. Like, they still want a prospect, but they just don't want to use number one on a certain prospect. So they trade down, hopefully pick up another asset, and then they maybe take, you know, someone like Isaac Okoro or a Devin Vassell, someone who's like defensively oriented but can hit shots. Well, Okoro has trouble hitting shots, at least from the outside, but Vassell at least. You know, I think that's in play too. That way they get someone, but they also pick up like maybe an additional first rounder for a later year, something along those lines. But but then, okay, on the flip side, what team wants to trade up for that pressure?
Right.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Right. And now let's jump down one spot to the Golden State Warriors, because as we mentioned, their pick, I mean, they've made no secret about it. Like, they are openly shopping this pick. They have a $17 million trade exception from the Andre Iguodala deal. They have Andrew Wiggins' contract to dangle. You know, the popular theme in Warriors Twitter, of course, if the Bucks lose before, if they don't win the title this year, they're going to offer Wiggins in the number two and the pick they, the other pick they got from Minnesota for Giannis. But I just can't imagine the Bucks have any interest in that package.
No.
What should the Warriors, like, who should they be going after if they're going to try to trade this pick? Like, Bradley Beal is going to be one of the more popular names on the trade market, but do you see him fitting with Stephen Clay, or should they be trying to target a wing instead?
I mean, obviously Beal would fit with those guys. I mean, that's, yes, of course he would, but I think you need a little bit more roster symmetry. Not that, you know, Clay Thompson can't play the three, but you'd be asking a lot for a guy who just came off like the ACL injury, though. That's a lot. Like, he should just be moving off the ball and just doing his bit. And that's, you know, I don't want to get too hung up on positions, because really positions doesn't exist to the same extent anymore. But like, even though he's a good defender, if you put him up on like larger wings, I wonder how effective he would be on the floor. So I would probably go a different route. I would see, and I don't think they get it. I don't think this guy is at all available, but I would throw the kitchen sink at Toronto to see if I could get Pascal Siakam. I don't think it's going to happen. And I proposed this in a Forbes article a while back, even before the Warriors made the Wiggins deal, actually. And I said they could try to go this route and at least offer. And Toronto fans got in my mentions immediately and called me all kinds of not very sweet things. Even though the only thing I did was just basically broach the subject. So we already know how Toronto, more or less, is feeling about this issue. Like, they probably won't give up Siakam. But I mean, at some point, you can offer them a package that they have to think about, right?
How are they going to say no to Maple Jordan? You can bring him home.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call.
Maybe not that, but like, you know, if you offer Wiggins and you offer number two and then the Minnesota pick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, doesn't that get you into a conversation?
I think it would depend on where Toronto is in terms of its team building plan. You know, what right. Their long-term vision is. Like, if Fred VanVleet walks this offseason and Ibaka and Gasol walk this offseason, or if they're planning to pivot into a full-scale rebuild, then yeah, they probably are more willing to entertain Siakam offers. But if they are, you know, if they go to the conference finals this year, they're probably going to want to just run it back next year and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree.
But no, that's a that archetype of player is definitely, I think, more along the lines of what Golden State should be looking at. I saw John Hollinger this morning propose a trade around Wiggins and number 2 for Jrue Holiday, and I think he threw in number 13 as well, which was at least interesting. Because at least, like, you know, that. Yeah, I like that idea too. But
again, like, you know, it would just force, you know, Clay into a role that I don't think is great for him. But again, I could see it because you would have a very, very efficient two-way, and I don't mean shooting efficiency, but efficient two-way player there who can start at the two, right?
Yeah, I mean,
that
it
has to be the vision.
I think the issue for Golden State is, like, clearly you would want a star wing, but
right,
most of those guys moved last summer in free agency. I mean, you had one in Kevin Durant, and he's clearly not coming back, and, like, you're not going to get the L.A. teams to give up LeBron, Kawhi, or Paul George. So, you know, there's a steep drop-off after that. And I don't... I mean, you know, I saw someone propose, like, Wiggins at number 2 for Ben Simmons. And I just don't know. I'm not saying the Sixers wouldn't entertain a Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid trade this offseason, but I don't think that's doing it for him.
No. No. I don't think so either. Like, Joel Embiid, though, would be interesting on Golden State. I don't think that there's a deal out there that could facilitate that at all.
Yeah.
But it would be fun.
If they do entertain an Embiid trade, I'd much prefer they talk to Brooklyn and get some combination of LeVert, Dinwiddie, Allen, or all three of them back.
I was about to say that had to be all three of them. Yeah.
But let's say, so, you know, hypothetically, let's say Golden State cannot find a taker for number 2. You know, depending on who Minnesota goes with, do you take the remainder of Ball or Edwards? Do you take Wiseman at 2? Do you take Ogunquu at 2? What do you do if you're the Warriors?
So I actually know that the Warriors, at least in the past, have liked James Wiseman. This was back in February, I was told this. So this is admittedly a long time ago. Things could have changed, and easily so. But they have liked Wiseman at some point. I don't like the idea of leaving behind, you know, one of Ball and Edwards when they're on the board. I think that's very, very risky. So again, this is going to be one of those scenarios where if you want Wiseman, you should probably try to trade down if you could. But no, you probably go with the best remaining player because that player should have more trade potential or trade value as well. So if you want to flip that guy later on in the summer, if some deal materializes, then at least you have the right guy to flip.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's hit Charlotte next at number 3. Assuming Ball and Edwards are off the board, I mean, they have a very clear need at center. So it seems like moving up to number 3 actually might have worked in their favor.
Yeah, I think so, because that's not a place where it's too far gone to take a James Wiseman or an Onyeka Okongwu. Like, there are two very good centers available. The question that I have about taking centers that high, and I've raised this in, like, a number of Forbes articles as well over the past half year or so, is given the price of centers, like, efficient centers, like, good centers in free agency, are you really at that point where you're considering not taking a center that high in the draft because you know you can get someone who might be like 60% as good or 80% as good in the free agency for like $5 million a year? I think that is something that every team right now is trying to gauge. Like, why would, like, I could totally understand why all 30 teams would sit down like across the table and just go, why should we at any point draft a center in the lottery and waste a lottery pick on a center when we can go out in free agency and for $5 to $6 million we can get someone who is, you know, a Rashawn Holmes or someone who just provides us with a very, very stable presence up front.
Or even, like, I mean, I think the success of Boston and Houston in these playoffs could shape perception in that regard, yeah, or further shape perception? Because, I mean, a Daniel Tice for Boston, who's only making $5 million a year, or Houston, who, yep, just said, F the center position. We don't care. We're not doing it. We just think we're going to play five guards and wings.
Right.
And, you know, right now they are blowing the doors off of OKC with that model. So it's a fair point. Like, if you're Charlotte, you know, yes, you have a glaring need at that position, but is that where you want to commit, significant resources heading? You're still in this rebuilding period. Like, is this guy going to get you far into the playoffs, or, you know, would you be better off targeting a guard or a wing?
Right. Now, again, I'm going to mention, like, trading out of the draft at virtually every position that we talk about.
Yeah.
But for the Hornets especially, I think there's logic in doing so, because if you want someone to pair up with Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier, who are like 25 and 20, 26, if memory serves, like, and I don't think they're, I know that they have some big contracts on their books, but they aren't too handicapped in that area. And like, you can throw in Nicholas Batum in any trade. Like, he's dead weight, but he's just like a tool to facilitate a trade because of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could like be interesting for them to shop around and see, okay, what can we get? It needn't be a wing. It could be, you know, a four. It could be another guard, and then you can figure it out later. I just want them to get someone who is good and who can actually lead the team in some way. One thing is that the Graham is leading the team in assist and primary ball handle, but you need a team leader. You need an identity. And maybe number three can facilitate that.
If one of Ball or Edwards falls and Wiseman is also on the board, or Ogunku is also on the board, what would you do there?
Edwards, like,
is Devontae Graham, or are Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier your backcourt of the future, like, good enough to ignore those positions? Say those positions are set.
Yeah, no. If LaMelo or Anthony Edwards drops to three, like, you take whoever's left and you don't think twice about it. Like, then you even, if you want to get funky, you even start Anthony Edwards at the three, despite him being like 6'4", 6'5". And then you just say, screw it. We're going to go all in on speed and agility and versatility, and we're going to be Houston of the East.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So let's move to Chicago at four, because they were the last team to move up. They jumped three spots. I know you've been hearing some buzz about some of their interests, and I don't know if you can relay specifics, but if you were Chicago, what would you do at number four?
Yeah, so basically what I've heard is that they like Denny Avdija from Maccabi Tel Aviv. And supposedly, the Cavaliers were all the way locked into Denny as well. So for the Cavs to drop down three spots to behind the Bulls at four and Cleveland is five, that, I'm guessing, left a pretty bad taste in their mouths last night, because they love him. And the Bulls, as of right now at least, are pretty, they're not set necessarily, but they're pretty keen on him moving forward. Again, we don't really know when the draft is going to be there. Like, right now, it's scheduled for October 16th, but that could get pushed because the NBA are still dealing with a lot of like scheduling issues and trying to move things around. So, like, we can't sit here and say, like, months before a potential draft, oh yeah, this is the one guy they've locked into, because we just don't know. They still want to get, you know, guys in the gym. They want to talk to people. They want to do a whole bunch of research. That might change the way that they view this draft, but as of right now, they have a good eye, so to speak, to Denny Avdija.
Mm. And he would be a good fit, positionally at least. I mean, if you're not attached to Otto Porter as part of your future, which I can't imagine the Bulls are at this point, like,
right.
And if you are attached to Coby White, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., then you've got a pretty glaring hole at the three. Or even, you know, a 3-4, and you can move, you know, whenever one of Wendell or Markkanen is sitting, you can move them to the five, and Denny could play the four as well. So
yeah,
I mean, positionally it seems like a good fit, definitely a boon to Chicago. Do you think, again, like, same question, if one of Baller Edwards falls to four and Denny's on the board as well, what would you do?
Oh, no, I'm probably, if they want, they need a point guard. I honestly think that the best possible place for LaMelo is the Bulls. I don't think there's two ways about it. I think the Bulls have so many weapons at their disposal. They just had Jim Boylan running the sidelines, which just didn't work, but they also needed a point guard. Tomas Satoransky is not someone who will break the defense down and get into the teeth of the defense, collapse it, and pass out, and do all these things. LaMelo wouldn't even be too concerned about scoring with the Bulls because Zach LaVine can take that, Lauri Markkanen can take that, and you know Wendell Carter is going to play a very different role next year, so he's going to be scoring more. I think LaMelo Ball, if he slips to four to the Bulls, that would be probably the biggest home run of the draft.
Yeah, I would assume. Yeah, I tweeted this last night in terms of like what I'm rooting for, just for hilarity's sake, would be Edwards to Minnesota because it's the Wiggins 2.0 vibes, Wiseman to Golden State because I know a lot of Warriors fans are just totally out on that idea.
Yeah,
and then LaMelo to Charlotte because. Like LaMelo is clearly into this, like, you know, celebrity life, wants to be in a big market, turn into the next big superstar. So sticking him on the Charlotte Hornets would just be so perfect.
Well, I mean, you're making jokes, but he would be under the tutelage of Michael Jordan, though.
I know. Yeah, but I forget who said this last night, but someone was like, yeah, finally LeVar and Michael Jordan could have their one-on-one.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Did you just Brian.
Yeah. It's been a while. Wait, I mean, he hasn't been as much of a fame whore lately. I feel like I could actually say his name. Maybe it'll make him reappear though, so I might have made a big mistake.
This is not good. If he does, I am blaming you. I'm basically taking this soundbite out, putting it on Twitter and just pointing at you and saying, blame him.
That's fair. That's definitely fair.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, we'll have a lot more draft coverage in the weeks to come. As Mort mentioned, Woj tweeted yesterday that there is some uncertainty as to when the draft actually will be. So the NBPA apparently met with players this week and prepared them for free agency to get pushed back, and now teams are hoping to push the draft back too. Long story short, there's just a lot of questions about the financials still. They're waiting for the audit for this season to be completed because teams really want to have a better sense of what next year's cap is going to be. That could influence some trade decisions heading into the draft. So in theory, the draft is set for mid-October. We will see, but we will have plenty of coverage of it whenever it does happen in the weeks to come as well. But the playoffs are still going on, so let's turn to some game twos that happened over the past few days. Let's start with Portland Lakers. You know, The Lakers were on the ropes after game one. Anthony Davis did not play all that well. LeBron did, but didn't do as much as they needed him to. He was much worse in game two. 10 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, 6 turnovers, but the Lakers still blow out the Blazers 111-88. AD was much better, 31 points, 13 of 21 shooting. I think the biggest story of the night, unfortunately, is Dame left early, suffered a dislocated finger. He said that he's planning to play game three, but know, we'll see if he does and how effective he is with it. How should both fans of both teams be feeling right now, Mort? Like, did this restore the wind in the Lakers' sails and now they're going to cruise through the series? Or, you know, do you think the Blazers still have one more counter punch in them?
That's a good question. I think that depends a little bit on Dame and how he's like healing up with a finger, and depends on schemes and adjustments. I will say as much, like we've talked about before, you know, how everyone was kind of like putting all the faith in one narrative, which was the Los Angeles Lakers defense. I would like to point out they hit 14 threes and put up 111 points. The defense was a factor. Absolutely it was. But if they did not start hitting from the outside, and they did not have an efficient 16-point game from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and an aggressive Anthony Davis, they wouldn't be here. The Lakers are at their best when they're balancing those two components. You know, sometimes they almost seem like, oh yeah, we can get away with just playing, you know, some tough defense, and then we'll hit a few shots, or vice versa. They need to lock in on both ends as they did last night. If they do that, yes, absolutely, the world's their oyster. But I just wonder if this is something that they can maintain. I mean, I know Twitter was just crowning their ass last night, which is fine. I mean, the Blazers fans had a fun 48 hours, so Lakers fans were eager to get back at them, which is all good. I've kind of enjoyed that whole back and forth, but I'm still not sure that this series is over. It's 1-1, and I think the narrative that the Lakers are now automatically 4-1, that's a little bit wrong. They need to show this consistently. And as we talked about a couple weeks beforehand as well, you know, Davis is the key here. During the seeding games, remember how in losses he was averaging 13 points, and in wins it was something, it was like 28. It was 38. He had a 25-point difference in losses and wins. Like, this is the guy you need. This is the guy who has to step up. This is the 16-game guy, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, more of him. More of this Anthony Davis. More offense. They needed that. Like, LeBron, 10 points, and they still blew him out by, what, 23?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was... That Davis was definitely the eye catcher from the Lakers side. I also liked they were running whoever Dame was guarding. They were just having that guy run through a ton of screens and like making Dame really work on defense, which was a nice adjustment. I'm with you. I don't think it's necessarily 4-1 Lakers, but you know, I think any dreams of a Blazers quick upset here died last night. Even, you know, even if Dame hadn't gotten hurt, this was a resounding FU game from the Lakers. And we saw that earlier from the Bucks and the Magic too. I mean, the Magic went on a late run, but the Bucks just snuffed them out from the opening tip, basically. Yep. Like it was just, okay, you know, you won game one, you caught our attention. Now we're going to actually focus and lock it. Like the Bucks defense was monstrous for most of that game. And, you know, the Lakers really just played pretty well on both ends of the floor. Like, if, as you said, if you're getting that kind of a game from LeBron James and you're still winning by 23, like, that puts you on alert.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying the Lakers are totally cured, and I feel better about where, you know, how they played over the last few weeks, and now I would have picked them to advance through the whole thing, but I'll tell you what, I mean... Their chief competition in the West may not be who we thought it was. So let's move to the other LA team because they lost 127-114 in game two. And now you've got to sit there thinking, had Kristaps Porzingis not gotten ejected in game one, would this be a 2-0 deficit for the Clippers right now?
I mean, you're asking me that question. I still think the Clippers are better, but I think it's fair to actually ask that. And I think it's fair to have a conversation about just how good they can be. But at the same time, I mean, I sort of feel there's a little bit of flukiness to this. I feel as though the Clippers are just still really just underrating the Mavericks a lot. It's almost like this game, this is going to be like the Portland win for the Clippers. Like, uh-oh, now you have our attention. I have a feeling that Game 3 is going to be a slaughter. Although I almost hope not, because this could be really, really fun. Like, imagine if Dallas goes up 2-1, and that's when the Clippers are, you know, locks in. Then we're in for a hell of a series.
Yeah. Yeah. For, I mean, look, Luka was, I would argue, better in Game 2 than Game 1, despite, you know, he had 42-9-7 or whatever in Game 1, but far more in control in Game 2. Yeah. I mean, only one turnover compared to 11. The Mavs, as a team, had 9 turnovers. Luka had 11 in Game 1 alone. So they were much more aware of the Clippers' length. Paul George just had a miserable game. I mean, 14 points on 4 of 17 shooting. Playoff P is back, baby.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't want to be the guy to bring that up, but what's that all about?
It's playoff P. That's the playoff P experience.
Yeah. That's not great, man.
Yeah. No, I'm not too concerned about him. He's going to bounce back. That's, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess the one mild concern, you know, after Game 2, you saw him in the post-game press conference, like, with a giant ice pack on that shoulder. Apparently, he's been doing it all year, so maybe it's not as much of a concern as it would look like, but it's just something to keep an eye on because, look, I mean, Kawhi was great, 35 points, 10 rebounds, but and then Lou Williams, 23 points off the bench. But, like, Montrez is still clearly working his way back into, you know, he just missed so much time. And the Patrick Beverley injury, he missed Game 2 with a calf strain. I think he is questionable for Game 3 or doubtful for Game 3. It didn't sound very optimistic that he would be coming back for Game 3. And, like, that's looming large right now.
Yeah. I mean, are you said the word. I'm not going to say the upset word on this one because I feel as though the Clippers are arguably the best team in the NBA. Whereas, like, as you and I agreed, like, for some reason, you and I don't have that feeling about the Lakers. But for the Clippers, that we do. Like, it's almost like they're an entirely different tier. But I mean, if that happens, let's just play this out. If the Clippers lose in round one, just, like, I'm not even sure how I could be able to comprehend that. What would be, like, the reaction to all this?
Honestly, it might be the funniest outcome outside of what we'll talk about shortly with Boston and Philly. Because, like, Kawhi and Paul George are only, they both have player options in 21. So, like, they're only guaranteed under contract for one more year.
Yeah.
Mark, and Montrezl Harrell's a free agent this summer. Like, Marcus Morris is a free agent, or not, whatever, this offseason. Marcus Morris is a free agent this offseason. Like, this could be a very different-looking Clipper team when we come back next year. If, you know, like, if Paul George just sucks it up through this whole series, does Kawhi Leonard, you know, kind of tilt his head a bit and be like, this isn't what I signed up for?
You mean like physically did the other night?
Yeah, right. Like, I left the Raptors for this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it would be super entertaining from a chaos and drama perspective, but, I mean, you know, we said it coming into this series, like, the Clippers are a better team, I think, and I would still pick them to win this, but, like, right. The Mavericks, that offense, I mean, we said that there's going to be at least a game or two where they just get super hot, and that's, you know, they had 6 guys in double digits in Game 2. Trey Burke, 16 points off the bench. Boban, 13 points, 9 rebounds in the best TNT interview I've ever seen.
I have not seen that. Give me a recap.
Oh, it's very good. he talked about, he was like, this is my first one, so I'm very nervous. He said, thank you for not inviting Luca. apparently, both of his parents are like 5 feet something, he said. They're like in the mid 5 foot range. And it was like the unspoken question of like, what the hell happened to you? But yeah, you know, for all of the crap that like Shaq and Chuck give to Joel Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns, Shaq was so effusive about Boban. He was like, thank you for playing like a big man should. It was like asking, how did you learn to play like this? Who were your mentors? It was, oh my God. It was very funny.
Look, this is why. This is why I want Boban unleashed for just a year.
Yeah. I mean, I said it after the interview aired. I was like, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Sixers became immediately less enjoyable when Boban walked.
Yeah. No, that's true. So the whole angle of, you know, this is my first interview, is he just saying that for everything now?
No, I mean, I would bet it probably was his like his first post-game interview.
No, because he said just that earlier this year.
On TNT?
Maybe it's ESPN. He said on national TV that this was his first interview. Maybe this is just a shtick of his, which if it is, I would love it. Like, I could just imagine Boban 2 years from now still, oh, this is my first
interview.
That would be the greatest bit in the NBA. I would love that.
It really would be. Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, but wait, let me ask you a question, though, because this is also interesting, because now I asked you about, like, the Clippers. What would happen if they lost this series? Obviously, the ramifications could be pretty huge, but if the Mavericks win this, because, you know, they would have to for the Clippers to lose, does that change the way that we look at the Mavericks in terms of being a championship contender almost immediately? Like, do we certainly catapult them into a new tier?
I would probably pick them over the Nuggets or Jazz right now. If they're beating the Clippers, I don't see why they couldn't beat either one of those teams.
Right? I mean, maybe they don't get past the Lakers in the conference finals, but like, imagine if the Mavericks made the conference finals in Luka's second year.
Look, we've been saying throughout the bubble that, you know, I knew the Bucks, Lakers, and Clippers were favorites going into this thing, but I was expecting some weirdness, and maybe it won't happen. Maybe this is just a game two overreaction, but like, I just wouldn't be that surprised if there was one, what we would consider a major upset, like whether it's the lack of home court advantage or, you know, the familiarity, the shooter's gym idea where these guys are just getting used to the same environment every night. And that could work in Houston's favor too. Like, right. Would a Rockets Mavericks final or Western Conference Finals be a huge surprise at this point? I don't think it would be.
Oh man, this year is all kinds of effed up, and I love it. I'm here for every second of it. I really am.
It's honestly more entertaining. Like, knowing that no team is safe from weirdness. Like, what if we have Rockets, Mavericks in one, and then like Miami Celtics in the other?
I might actually shed a tear of joy just because of the sheer lunacy of it.
And I would get off Twitter for the entire Eastern Conference Finals.
Oh my God! Yes, Heat fans and Celtics fans. Oh my God, that would be a bloodbath.
Oh, it would be terrible.
If that was a message forum, everyone would get banned.
100%. Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Since we're on the Celtics board, let's just pivot to that series quickly.
Yes.
The only thing I have to say is this is a years-long series of failures coming to roost for the Sixers. They should burn the whole damn thing down. Brett's gone. The front office is gone. The entire thing is out. Like,
okay. You got that out of the way. Let's talk about Boston now.
Yeah.
Because I look, here's the thing. I know. I know that you feel bad about the Sixers, but you know, I just want to actually discuss the Celtics here. I know that your main idea is, hey, let's crap more on the Celtics or the Sixers, but we just got to talk about Tatum, man. We have to just devote this segment right here to just strictly talking about Jason Tatum. What he's doing right now, he's outstanding. He's outstanding. You know why? I'll be completely upfront with you on something. You know, I'm not one of those guys who wants to dislike a player. I don't like that. I'm not one of those guys roots for failure or anything, and I never would. But there was a part of me during Tatum's rookie season that kind of irked me a little bit because, you know, Bill Simmons was pumping up saying this might be the greatest Celtic of all time, and like the Celtics fan base got behind it, and it became a little bit obnoxious. And I remember you and I actually recording an episode where we started talking about it, and we were like, you know what, let's come to the realization here that that shouldn't reflect poorly on Tatum because he's not in control of the narrative. But when the narrative's so intense, you just kind of get hung up on it a little bit, and you start to almost like enjoy when he's not living up to like the great expectation, because you kind of wanted to go, hey, see, you guys were wrong a little bit. And I'll own that I had a little bit of that during his rookie season, and thankfully I shed that over his second year, unfortunately, in which he went all Kobe mode, but that's an entirely different story. But I am absolutely loving what he's doing right now. Like, everything that the fan base was basically saying about him is coming true, but I actually don't have a problem with it now because I'm just enjoying watching him play and seeing him grow. Like, he is so good. Like, what are we talking about here? Is he a top 7 player already? Like, I don't know where to categorize him or label him. Well, okay, maybe top 10 or something, but he's entering that airspace now. Like, he's getting into it. Maybe he's not quite there yet then. Maybe I just had a slight overreaction. But hell, this is an overreaction pod. But, like, he's breaking his way through that, like, there, into that discussion, isn't he?
Yeah. I was going to ask this about him. If you're, you know, like, Bill Simmons had that trade value column, or used to, when he actually wrote.
Oh, yeah. When he was actually interesting. Yeah.
Right. So, Luka Doncic is clearly number one in the NBA. I mean, guys on their rookie contracts by default, like superstars on their rookie contracts, are going to have more trade value just because they are so cheap and outperforming their deal.
Yeah.
Is Jason Tatum number two in the NBA?
Ooh. I mean, I know the Pelicans fans would jump in and say Zion, but it's not Zion.
I would remove contract from the equation. I would take Tatum over Zion right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would too. You know, I'm coming up short. I'm coming up short on alternatives. He might be.
Like Ja Morant, Trae Young.
No, I'm taking Tatum over those guys, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah, I mean, he has developed, like, I wanted to dislike him, but I did dislike him for a while because of what he did to the Sixers in 2018, and that he sent us down, spiraling down this path of self-destruction. But, you know, I was defending this guy last year because everyone, like, the narrative after his rookie year was like, oh, well, maybe he peaked. Like, maybe he came into the league, you know, he played the Duke for 1 year and he got the Mike Krzyzewski tutelage, and, like, he was so polished as a rookie, he probably doesn't have that much room to grow. And then he didn't take that big jump in his second season, and all these, you know, everyone's taking like the I told you so lap, like this is just who he is. It's like, all right, the kid's 20, like can we let him maybe just grow at his own pace and realize the dysfunction of last year's team probably hampered him, and then seeing what he's become, especially you know, in the last few months before the shutdown, and that's carried right over here. Like, there is no ceiling on Jason Tatum. I think it's premature to call him a top 10 player now, or a top 7 player, but like, he's heading in that direction quickly. I don't think it'll be, if he sustains this over the course of next year, it will not be premature.
Right.
Like, he is a superstar. He's playing like a superstar, and there's nothing the Sixers could do against him. They have absolute, like, Thybulle is doing the best job he can. And I think it is smart for Brett Brown to have moved him into the starting lineup and match minutes against Tatum, because without Ben Simmons, Thybulle is their best bet. But it doesn't matter. They just have no answer for him. And, you know, Brett was talking about, like, we need to adjust our pick and roll coverage. It's not going to matter. And even if they had Ben Simmons, it wouldn't matter. They were going to lose this series no matter what.
Yeah, I agree. So one final note on Tatum, just to wrap him up. You know, I know that some people will probably add us on Twitter and go, well, it's easy to say that about a guy who's hitting 8 out of 12 from downtown and you know, 12 out of 20 overall in a game. Like, he's not going to do that every game. You know, it's not even about, like, the accuracy necessarily. Oh, sure, that plays a part of it, but I know that those numbers are, you know, not sustainable. It's the way he just plays. It's the way he gets to those shots. It's the way that he's patient. It's the way that when he drives, he's under control. It's his presence, right? I mean, he just plays so smart for someone who isn't a point guard, if you catch my drift, and who's 22 years old.
I mean, it's the ease at which he creates shots for himself.
Yeah.
Like, that's what separates good from great, great from elite. Like, if you can create, you know, last year, he, as you said, he fell into, like, the bad Kobe mode where he's jacking up a lot of isolation mid-range twos, or we'll call it bad Carmelo because I don't want to disrespect Kobe anymore. This year, he's become more efficient in terms of his shot selection, but he does have that Kobe-esque ability to just pull up from anywhere and create shots on his own, and they're good shots because he's hitting them. Like, he has the ability to do so. I just don't think, not only do the Sixers not have an answer for him, but like, looking ahead to next series against the Raptors, I mean, what do you think the Raptors, like, is it, I guess it'll be a combination of OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam on Tatum and Brown, but I don't know if anyone really has a good answer for Jason Tatum. If they move to the conference finals and the Bucks are there, it'll be Chris Middleton and Giannis. But again, like, Middleton is a top 20-ish player in the NBA, and I think Tatum's got a chance to roast him.
Oh, yeah. No, you have to plug, like, Giannis on him all the time. That's the only guy I could see realistically limit him drastically. Because here's the thing about Tatum. When he shoots, right, he's of the old school Ben Gordon school. So whenever Ben would shoot, and I've mentioned this numerous times on this podcast, he would always square his shoulders towards the basket. Like, that was the one thing that Ben Gordon did that made him this tremendous shooter. It didn't even matter if he was out of balance with his feet and they were, like, hanging in the air. Like, he would just sort of get his torso and shoulders just perfectly aligned with the basket every single time. Jason Tatum does that exact same thing. Like, whenever you watch him play, it doesn't matter when he takes, like, a fadeaway or, like, sidesteps or a step back or whatever he does, he'll make sure that the torso is just perfectly aligned every single time. And I think for that to be implemented in him at such an early age, it just means that there's a larger margin for error, honestly. He's almost proven himself to always have this steadiness about him because he has those principles that he always relies on. It's pretty remarkable to see someone at that age do that kind of thing. Like, I can't really think of a guy who does it the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. He's developed into that incredible player. And again, I mean, I'm speaking to Sixers Twitter here because there are people who are deluding themselves into thinking this series would be different with Ben Simmons. It would not.
No, no, of course not. You know what would be different, though? If you hadn't traded him for Markelle Fultz.
that would have been helpful, yes. Or if they hadn't traded Mikal Bridges, who would have been a very... Mike O'Connor, who now writes for the Rights to Ricky Sanchez website that used to be of The Athletic, tweeted at, in the wake of this game two destruction, had the Sixers just not done anything, like just taken Mikal Bridges and then stopped trading for 2 years, they would have been, like, if you go through their roster, they would have been in such better shape than what they are right now. It's remarkable. It is truly remarkable how badly they've screwed this up. And we'll get, I mean, I think we almost have to do a bye Felicia for them just because of the offseason carnage that is awaiting. But there's no easy way out for them. You know, I was on the radio yesterday with Josh Hennig of 97.3 ESPN, and he's like, so how do you fix this? And I'm like, can you? I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy way out here. Like, Al Horford and Tobias Harris have two of the worst contracts in the NBA. You're not going to get out of them easily. Like, all of these fan fiction trades of Al Horford for Buddy Hield, why do the Kings do that?
Yeah. No.
We'll get into it. I'm expecting Sunday will be the last game of the Sixers season, most likely. So we'll save that for another day.
But, you know, honestly, you and I need to cooperate a little bit more. You and I are always on the radio separately. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's up with that? Come on, guys. Get in the game. Get both of us. 2-1.
Josh does always shout you out, or at least mention the pod and my radio appearances. And he's a big fan of our redrafts, which we'll apparently to go back to at some point.
Yeah, for sure. Like, when this season is over and we are going through, like, a nine-month off-season or whatever it ends up being, we'll go back. We'll be like, hey, guys, welcome to the 1968 NBA redraft.
Yeah, hopefully, God, please give us more material than that, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Let's wrap up with Utah-Denver, Mort. Because yes. Utah laid an absolute spanking on the Nuggets. 124-105, and the Nuggets outscored them by 8 in the fourth quarter. So it was even more of a blowout than it looked like. Donovan Mitchell, again, didn't have 57, but he had 30 points on only 14 shots.
Yeah.
Also 8 assists. Jordan Clarkson was a lot more efficient, 26 off the bench on 9 of 18 shooting. Again, it's the same story as game one, where the scoring was largely concentrated between four guys, Mitchell, Clarkson, Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert. But the Nuggets just had no answer for any of them. So Mike Conley, I believe he's been declared probable for game three.
Right.
Are the Jazz now the favorites in the series?
I'm not ready to go that far. It's 1-1. And, you know, it's, again, Donovan Mitchell is not going to score 30 on 14 shots, I think, routinely. That's probably too much to ask. But, no, I mean, this has become, I think, probably the most interesting and also, you know, most fun series in the first round, right? I mean, of all the games that I've seen and all the series that I follow, Utah and Denver is like the one that I'm just enjoying the most, right? Are you with me on that one?
I'd say Clippers, Mavericks still for me, but this one's number two.
Yeah, that's true. That's you know what it is, though? It's because that's fair, and I'm coming in a little bit biased there because I got both games spoiled by people.
Yeah.
It's the Luka mania. I just cannot wake up and not get some sort of text message or Facebook alert or whatever about, hey, fellow European, did you know that Luka Doncic says something really well? He actually won the game, so you don't have to catch it. Great, toodles. Like, shut up. Just let me watch the damn game. I would love it. But no, okay. But Utah and Denver is definitely up there for me. I love it. I think there's so much offensive fluidity. Michael Porter Jr., like 28 points and 17 shots in game two. I just love the back and forth, right? It's almost like a playground game. I really dig it. In terms of, like, let me actually answer your question. No, I don't think Utah's the favorite. I don't. I still think it's Denver. I still think they have, you know, some strings that they can pull. But it's going to be a significantly tougher series. I almost want to copy paste what I said about the Lakers and Blazers series in basically saying this is not going to be one of those series where, you know, the winner is going to come out and say, oh, that was an easy breezy series. Like, no, this is going to be an absolute dogfight to the very end. So whoever comes out victorious, they're going to have to lick their wounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I guess either way, this thing is probably going six or seven. So it's hard to declare a favorite, but I'm starting to move a little toward Utah unless, I mean, again, it sounds like Will Barton is nowhere close to returning. I haven't heard anything definitive about Gary Harris, but
no,
with like those two guys are important. Those two guys are genuinely important to what the Nuggets do. If not offensively,
because they play defense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Michael Porter Jr. is a layup line and the Jazz have quickly figured that out and are actively targeting him on defense. And, you know, Murray cooled off, only had 14 points on 6 of 13 shooting. Like, Jokic was his typical sensational self, 28, 11, and 6. But, like, if they've got to lock in defensively. They can't let a Jazz team with four guys, and now, I mean, soon to be five with Conley, but, like, they know where the offense is coming. And right. They still couldn't do anything to stop it. Like, Donovan Mitchell was just so in control of that game from the opening tip. And I know people on Jazz Twitter were saying, like, this is more impressive than his 57-point game. Just because of the way he controlled the pace.
That's an interesting perspective. I hadn't thought about that because, obviously, 57 is just such a breathtaking number. But, you know, right. I'm actually inclined to agree with them. He played a proper, like, floor game. And I'm saying that, like, he almost had a 57-point triple-double, actually. Like, he was pretty high on both rebounds and assists. But you're right. Like, he was more in control. Like, the passes he made were more, I want to say, sophisticated in a way. That's actually a pretty good point by Jazz Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested to see what happens moving forward in this series. I mean, I don't think there's much to say. Like, Milwaukee-Orlando, we mentioned earlier, like, the talent gap. Milwaukee woke up. This thing's going to be over in five. Miami-Indiana, you know, nothing has really changed from game win. Victor Oladipo did come back, but...
Oh, like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Brian. We have breaking, because we just talked about it, of course. And like, this is typical. Vooch has a story out on Mike Conley returning for game three.
There you go.
So that was perfect timing. Vooch is listening in live somehow. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Quinn Snyder. Appreciate the assist there. Yeah, well, so there you go. That'll add an element of intrigue to game three of Jazz Nuggets. But yeah, Miami, Indiana, like, the Pacers just don't have the firepower. It sucks. Like, without Sabonis, they're lacking such a big presence on offense. And again, I mean, Miles Turner had 17 points, but only took 8 shot attempts. we're going to get Caitlin Cooper on at some point soon, and we're just going to spend the entire segment grilling her about Miles Turner. And then, yeah. All right, can you at least give the Brooklyn Nets a shout-out for being plucky?
No. I don't care.
Come on! They were so close.
They're 0-2. They didn't get the job done.
I know, but for that team, as undermanned as they are, to have even been in the ballpark of Toronto on the fourth quarter.
Okay. I'll say as much. Well done, Brooklyn Nets, for losing with just 5 points to the Toronto Raptors. Well done. Well done, Caris LeVert, on shooting 5 of 22. Well done.
Well done, the zombie Nets, you mean? I don't know.
I am just making fun of you because you have been on this train for so long. Now it's just if I actually run with your logic, it's just gonna ruin the whole gag. Fine, agree with you. What they've done is impressive. Look, I didn't think that Joe Harris had a 15 rebound game in him, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah,
that was incredible. Garrett Temple has played somewhat steadily. He's game one, he had a huge series of mistakes. Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot has turned himself finally into an NBA player. I was waiting for this. You know, I was always annoyed when teams didn't give him a shot. So finally, he's found a place that actually gave him one. What is that? Another Prospect Sixer that he could have used right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Turns out, when you give up on young players before they fully develop, it often comes back to haunt you. Who knew?
Yeah, it's really weird.
Who knew trades would backfire?
Jared Allen should not get traded.
Yeah.
This is what I'm basically taking away from this.
I mean, if anything, this only emphasizes your point about the Nets. Like, they had such a good young core already that they tried to speed up their process as well. And we'll see what happens next year with KD and Kyrie. And if they trade some of these guys for a third star. But I was talking with someone yesterday, and I think he will remain nameless to protect him from getting flamed by this player. But we were talking about potential trades, involving players on his team. I'll say that much. And he's like, "Hey, man, if we're not going to keep this guy around long term, I would call Brooklyn immediately and try to trade this guy for some of their young guys, for Allen and LeVert. Because, if Brooklyn is really serious about getting that third star in, every single team should be calling them and be like, please let us be the ones that you dump these guys on, because they're good.
Right.
Right. They actually have the ammunition to add a third star. I think it would be a win-win for both sides, more likely than not.
What I wonder is, what kind of category does Jared Allen fall into? Like, he's obviously very good right now, but is he a guy you take on, for a rebuilding team? Or is he already ready, so you just need to pluck him in on a winning team, and the Brooklyn Nets just have not realized it?
Possible. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he's ready to win a championship as your starting center next year. And I think that's what, by virtue of acquiring Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, that's what you're hoping for.
Right.
But I think he could develop into that type of player very soon.
I mean, very soon could already be next year, though, theoretically.
Yeah, it's possible. Look, I mean, I was talking to this guy about one of his team stars, and I was like, look, man, if the Sixers are going to entertain Embiid or Simmons trades, you could do a lot worse for Embiid than, LeVert, Dinwiddie, Allen, and whatever else you would need to include. You could argue that both teams would be better.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So I'm mostly intrigued from Brooklyn's perspective. Joe Harris left the bubble. I know they're going to get killed in these next two games. That was always going to be the outcome of this series. But they've set up a really interesting offseason for themselves.
I have a feeling that even though we all kind of predicted that there's not going to happen a whole bunch in the offseason, simply because nobody really knows where the hell the NBA is going to be for next season, these are the kinds of things where I could imagine seeing some trades and some stuff. I don't think we're going to get an off season that is, you know, not full of events. I think we're definitely going to see some things, and the Nets will be one thing, and the Sixers, as you touched upon, and we can touch on that in a later episode. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see something, you know, happen with those two squads, and like you said, maybe even between themselves. Do you think realistically, though, that Philly would even entertain trading Embiid to a fellow Eastern Conference team?
They should. I don't think it matters.
No, I agree with you on that. But, you know, NBA teams sometimes have weird ideologies.
Yeah, I mean, possibly they might not. But at the same time, if the Nets have by far the best offer and they're willing to... Like, I don't think they're going to, and we'll get into this later, but, like, I don't think they're going to actually seriously entertain Embiid or Simmons offers this offseason, and I don't necessarily know that they should, but I just think they're so stuck at this point that they might need to at some point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're looking ahead and, like, maybe the Pelicans can offer something down the road, but, like, the Nets have a lot to offer right now, and I think someone... If it's not the Sixers, someone should take them up on it if they are serious about adding that third piece. And if they're looking specifically for a center, I think it's Embiid or Rudy Gobert would be the other main option.
One. Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll touch on that at a later date. For now, I think we'll wrap up here. I hope everyone enjoys Games 3 and probably 4. I don't know if we're going to record again before some of these Games 4s. So enjoy. Hope the Sixers get mercy killed for all of our sakes. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, any movie review?
No, I have not had the time, so I'm a little bit behind. I am planning on watching that new Netflix film with Jamie Foxx and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the about the pills that gives you superpowers. I don't remember what it's called.
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, really? It's been marketed pretty heavily.
Yeah. Well, I think I might have seen like a commercial for it, but
yeah, no, but I'm planning on seeing that, so that's probably going to be the next one. But I'm crazy busy this weekend, so maybe not. But hopefully, Mort's movie reviews will return soon enough.
And to be fair, there have been like 12 hours of basketball on every day, so dude, it's been hard to squeeze in.
Mo Dekhil said it best, like. 4 hours of basketball every single, or not four, sorry, four games of basketball every single day. Like, you get exhausted by just watching.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I really, it is hard to keep up with all of them. And full disclosure, I'm going to miss, I'm giving blood today at one, so I'm going to miss a good chunk of Raptors Brooklyn. But I think I chose a good one to miss, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not complaining, by the way. I'm getting NBA in primetime. I can't complain.
I know.
It's fine. It's completely fine. I love it. I'm just saying that after like four games, I'm swamped. Because the last game for me finishes up at like 5 a.m. I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. Well, rest up and good luck this weekend, and we'll catch up soon.
Definitely, drum boy. Don't die.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6-packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.